Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
I am today informing Indianapolis that as mayor, I will be leading an effort to file a Major League Soccer application and pursue a club for our city.
Well, looks like we're getting a Major League Soccer franchise, Hammer. That's good news, right? That's like three professional franchises now here in the city of Indianapolis. We're getting this, right? We're doing it. It's all in.
Well,
all the chips are in the table here, right?
There's a few layers to peel back here. So this story really is an onion, right? Multiple layers to it. So yesterday, about toward the end of our program, Boss Hogsett throws this very hastily scheduled last-minute presser, and I'm using presser in air quotes, to say that the city of Indianapolis is pursuing a Major League Soccer franchise.
Wednesday of this week, I directed the Department of Metropolitan Development to file a professional sports district area resolution with the Metropolitan Development Commission. This resolution provides the city of Indianapolis with an additional option for a stadium site in our pursuit of a Major League Soccer club. In the weeks ahead, I will work with City County Council, state legislative leadership, the state of Indiana, and other community leaders to put Indianapolis in the best position possible to be successful in this application process.
Key words there being in the weeks ahead. The Indy City County Council was blindsided by this. Not just the Republicans, but the Democrats too.
Was wondering if the Indy 11 was blindsided by this, because isn't the city kind of backing their new stadium proposal, the minor league franchise?
I'm glad you bring that up. A spokesperson for Boss Hogsett tells the WIBC newsroom, quote, 11 Park was never more than a proposal. There was no agreement between Keystone Group and the city.
A Keystone Group is the one that owns Indy 11.
Right. And they were building the stadium on the near west side, not too far from Lucas Oil Stadium. This wasn't going to feature any taxpayer, you know, funds. This was on their own. And in return, the area around the stadium was going to be adding like restaurants, maybe apartment complexes,
hotels,
to which, you know, later on that revenue would go back to the Indy 11, kind of as a thank you for building your stadium. Turns out that's probably not going to happen now.
No, it's not going to happen.
Despite the fact that there's a big construction site over there with fencing, and it's a mess, man. It looks like Boss Hogsett kind of went rogue on this. Now, I've got very low expectations of Joe. I think everybody knows this. But I don't think Joe Hogsett goes to the MLS, the Major League Soccer people, and pitches, you know, a host city without having the backing. He didn't say who the backers were, but I'm willing to bet he's got some people. But he hasn't talked to the council. He needs the council's approval. And are the taxpayers going to be on the hook for some new stadium? And what happens with the Indy 11? Because if you get the MLS franchise, do you just give two middle fingers to the Indy 11 and say thank you for all the cooperation and help you've done in the city, but kick rocks?
The city never signed any official documentation with the Indy 11, because they examined the deal further, from what I understand, and it didn't look like it was exactly going to be a revenue generator. And so the city never officially signed the deal with the Indy 11.
And Rob Kendall made a great point earlier today. Listen, as much as you may love the Indy 11 and you kind of feel bad for them, like they're getting the shaft in this situation, this is what happens when you dance with the devil. When you make a half-assed deal with Joe Hogsett, of all people, where you don't have all of your, you know, I's dotted and T's crossed. This is what happens when you deal with that type of dude. Now, the other question, let's say Indy doesn't get this MLS franchise because other cities are bidding, Sacramento and Tampa. Let's say the MLS decides to go to Tampa. Do you go back to the Indy 11 now and go, hey, sorry, we're cool, right? Like, does that happen?
I don't think so. Didn't you say, was it you or who was mentioning the article on the IBJ about the relationship between Keystone and the city?
It's salty. So the timeline of this is that Keystone Group finds out that Joe Hogsett is on his way to the East Coast to pitch Indy as a host city, and he's been looking for financial backers, you know, billionaire backers, to help this potential new franchise. The Indy 11 gets wind of this, so they speak to the IBJ and say, hey, this is happening here. It's a bad relationship, and even though there's a big area blocked off on the near west side, we may be out. This might not happen. So what Hogsett does in response, and this is a classic weasel Joe Hogsett move, he schedules a press conference a couple hours after that IBJ story drops. But the press conference was worthless. He had no information, and he didn't take any questions. The only reason he trotted his ass out there was to try to limit the story from the IBJ.
Big question is, are you going to give Boss Hogsett credit if in the end he pulls this off?
Well, I have to see the information. If it's not taxpayer funded, fine. Congratulations. But if he's going to be asking for the taxpayers to fund a Major League Soccer stadium in any capacity, that's going to be a tough sell. Because if you remember, even the Colts had a hard time getting their taxpayer-funded stadium through. And the NFL is king. The NFL is the biggest monster in sports.
Rob Kendall's still sore about that deal.
He's still salty about it. So whenever this thing gets done, who's paying for this? And according to our friend Abdul, who writes in Indy Politics, it sounds like the City County Council, both Republicans and Democrats, are really ticked off that they were kept in the dark with this.
And what's going to happen to 11 Park, the soccer complex?
Right.
I mean, the ground's already been broken. Isn't there a picture of Hogsett with a shovel?
Yes.
Breaking ground on the 11 complex?
Absolutely there
and
is.
And now he turns around and says, all right, kick rocks. MLS, here we come.
How much of this do you think is Joe Hogsett realizing he's in his third term as mayor and he's got nothing to show for himself? His legacy as a third term mayor, which is very, very rare in the city. There's only been a couple and he's one of them. But his legacy is the highest homicide rates in the history of the city. And when the riots happened under his watch, he was nowhere to be found. He may or may not have been in a rehab facility in Richmond. I don't know if that's true. That's the rumor. But that's his legacy right now. Do you think he's trying to get something done so years from now he can say, I was a three-term mayor and I brought a major franchise to Indy?
Well, that could be incredibly naive, but could you imagine a politician doing something out of selfishness and then making it about them rather than for the benefit of the city?
Yes, 100%. Check out this tweet from the ACLU Indiana.
Really? Do I have to?
Quote, we are monitoring the situation at IU Bloomington, where police officers are detaining peaceful pro-Palestinian protesters. The First Amendment is central to our democracy. Suppressing these rights through unwarranted police action weakens our society's commitment to free speech. So for those of you keeping score at home here, this is in regards to the 30 plus people that tried to set up an encampment at IU Bloomington, where they were heckling and harassing and saying very anti-Semitic things to Jewish students and staff.
Intimidation, sure.
The ACLU of Indiana, when given the opportunity to stick up for the Jewish students and staff who are being threatened because of their faith and who they are. The ACLU of Indiana chose to support those yelling death threats to him. Mm. That's who those people are.
Sounds about right.
Listen, with all this crazy talk about what's happening here in Indy, I think we all need to take a big step back and celebrate something. If you're looking for a reason to drink tonight, you've got Pacers playoffs, you've got the NFL draft, rounds 2 and 3, which you can hear here at 93 WIBC tonight. But it's also the 72nd birthday of our former news anchor, Stan Lear.
No way!
Love Stan Lear.
I miss Stan Lear. He retired a few years ago.
He did. And he was just the absolute best on the air. And for a long time, we had a Stan Lear soundboard where we would just record various things he would say in actual newscasts and isolate them and then later use them completely out of context. So what we've done here to celebrate Stan Lear's 72nd birthday, Hammer and Nigel Films have partnered with the soundboard of Stan Lear for an upcoming summer blockbuster movie.
In a world filled with fake news,
now we know that the vaccines work well enough that the virus stops with every vaccinated person.
There's only one man that we turn to for real news.
What's up, bro? I'm Stan Lear.
Stan Lear in Anchorman 3. The Stan Lear story.
Shut the F up.
WIBC's veteran newsman telling his amazing life story.
He's trying to score some meth.
You'll hear the stories that shaped his life.
Somebody had flushed their underpants down a toilet.
And common sense commentary.
Hoosiers are fatter.
Stan Lear will recall painful life lessons.
You shouldn't buy oxycodone on the street.
And
crack is whack.
But you'll also hear his triumphs as well.
Ever watch Cat House on HBO?
Yeah! With co-stars Wiz Khalifa.
Do you know who Wiz Khalifa is? He's a rapper.
And John Herrick.
Penis Inspection Day.
Anchorman 3 with Stan Lear.
It has been dubbed revenge porn.
This summer from Hammer and Nigel Films.
Now that is a summer blockbuster right there.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Yes, I'm a mess with it. Yes, I'm a just got stressed.
My name is Nigel. Hammer's here. Matt Bear, the traffic beast, live in studio with us after the show tonight. Will you be watching the remnants of the Pacer game? Are you a Pacer fan, or do you just maybe kind of like the tone, the atmosphere that the Pacers bring to downtown Indianapolis as a downtown resident yourself?
Oh, I'll watch the whole thing. We'll have it on back in the traffic center. You know, I'll be able to catch bits and pieces of
Thank you for ignoring our show for about 90 minutes to watch the Pacer game, Matt.
Hey, no problem, dude.
And I'm not salty at all that we have to be in studio when the game's on.
It is an awesome atmosphere. I mean, when I was coming in a few minutes ago, There were people everywhere and happy people. So yeah, lots of pedestrian traffic, and if we could watch out for that, that'd be cool. But it's a good time, man. I absolutely love this time of year with May coming up and Pacers and Racers. Hopefully we can get some.
Hopefully,
going. Yes.
Yeah, it's a good vibe downtown, except for those coming off the highway of 70. Like, because I come from the southwest side, and I jump on 70 to come to work, and I normally get off on the Meridian Street, Illinois exit. So I do that. I'm driving down Illinois Street, ready to pull into our parking garage, but it's blocked. It's closed. All of Illinois Street is closed on the weekend where PopCon starts. Big time Pacers playoff games are going underway. Now, mind you, all week long, not a damn thing was happening, but night where game 3 of the playoffs and PopCon arrive, we got to shut the street down for construction of the government funded hotel.
You know, it's funny. It's not funny at all, but it's funny. how these
it's all right.
Street closures
you can say it's funny.
Just was just kind of pop up out of nowhere. I mean, I was coming down Penn to the circle from 16th, and all of a sudden we lost two lanes, and nobody knew what to do. I mean, I could see the arrow for six blocks. Nobody else could. I got in a proper lane, and next thing you know, we're all trying to squeeze into the same lane at the last time, and nobody got hit, so that was kind of nice. But yeah, it's frustrating, and it's going to get worse because construction season is just now ramping up.
And it's going to be this way, at least on Illinois Street downtown, for a couple weeks minimum. So if you're coming downtown, like, the weather's supposed to be a little warmer this weekend. Pacers got playoff games tonight and Sunday. You know, PopCon's going on. All these restaurants. I mean, Illinois Street's a big deal. There's parking garages in Illinois, and now people got to, you know, play Tetris to maneuver around downtown.
And that's exactly what I feel so bad for my vape shop right now. They have road construction right next to them. And they actually have to put up a sign that says, "Yes, we're open." And I'm like, how do you sell
salts? Let's do a GoFundMe for a vape shop.
I think that's a great idea.
Hey, well, you joined us earlier this week to talk about ramp metering. This is the thing that's happening predominantly on, like, the southeast side, where you can't just merge onto the highway now. You come up to this light, and you might have to stop and wait for your turn to drop the hammer and merge into the flow of traffic. You told us you were going to have a conversation with the movers and shakers. How did that go?
It went well. Listen, these are people, too. And it's funny, the person I was talking to from MnDOT East has to go through all this every single day on her commute coming in from Greenfield. So we were kind of chatting about that. And the ramp metering is very much on. And it's going to start on Monday, at least the testing warning phase, when you approach some of this interstate from these ramps, like Emerson Avenue, the on-ramp Emerson 2465, both directions, and Southeastern and Washington and Brookville Road, for a matter of fact. You're going to have a flashing yellow light, and you're going to be like, what the hell do I do? Well, just keep going. Just merge safely like you normally do. And then the week from Monday on May 6th, that's when you're going to see the red light, which means stop. Green light means go. Yellow light again. Just caution. Just
now, it's
go.
That red light that people are like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to stop right on the ramp before I get into the flow of traffic?
It is so counterintuitive, I know. Because what I'm thinking on is, when I'm getting onto 465, I'm like, I just want to get on this interstate alive. That's what I'm thinking when I get on 465 and now there's a red light. I think this is going to be a good thing. And the people I talk to in other markets where they deal with ramp metering, they say, yeah, it's something to get used to, but once it's there, you hardly notice it. And they kind of like it in the fact that it does make merging easier onto the interstate.
Okay.
And with this awful piece of road, this 52.7 mile stretch that nobody put any thought into when they first constructed it, yeah, a little help. I'm going to welcome it. And hey, if I'm wrong, I'll be the first one to tell you. Absolutely.
We were talking off air. How's your love life, Matt?
It's good. You know,
no, it's not.
Yeah, it's
stop lying to our listeners, Matt.
Hey, I haven't been dumped in a long time.
Are you in a relationship?
No, not a relationship.
Okay.
Goes,
no,
I goes, do. Well, hey. Somebody waved at me at the gym today, and I go, were they waving at you, or were they waving you away?
Listen,
Matt was just staring at them eating a corn dog like Billy Bob Thornton was in Bad Santa.
I was licking my fingers, okay?
Did you make a heart shape and say, I'm glad you're here?
I did. I absolutely did. And I don't care if she's waving me off. A wave is a wave. That's all I know.
She had a restraining order in the other hand.
I want to be married by the end of the year. I really do.
End of the year?
Quite a goal.
I'd like to be married by the end of the
year.
Good
Lord.
In some way, shape, or form. I need to
Can we just settle for a date?
No. I mean, listen, we can go on a date, but I'm going to tell her on that first date I am ready to marry you.
Because that's what chicks are looking for.
They want to get married.
That'll be your last date, unfortunately.
they want to be a guy's, what is it, last romance, first, I don't
Allison's
know.
Allison's over here just looking like she saw a ghost.
Yeah. I want to be married. I want to split my bills and split my debt.
That's, how about if we find someone insanely
really
hot for you, Matt, and you just go on a few dates and see what happens?
No kidding.
I mean, we're talking nines and tens, like, just insanely hot. You deserve it.
I'm all for it. I really am, but I am going to say on that first date, this is going to lead to matrimony. Do you understand? We are going to.
And you realize realize that the rest of the day it's going to be just yourself sitting at the table.
Hey, if she can't handle the heat, get out of the kitchen. That's what I say. I'd like to be married by the end of the year. I really would.
Well, best of luck to you.
That's a tall task. But if you'd like to hit on Matt Bear, if you'd like to slide some nudes into his inbox or whatever your way of getting his attention is, where can they go, Matt?
They can go to Matt in Traffic on Twitter, at Matt in Traffic. And I'm still interested in Lauren Boebert, very much so. So if she's listening right now, as I grab this.
Shoot your shot, Matt. Mad at you. Shoot that shot.
Listen, you're through your first divorce, and that means that's really good for me. But
dude, divorce chicks right out of a divorce, they're down to clown.
That's what I'm saying. You know, I can be the rebound.
Fish in a barrel.
For Lauren Boebert, I would be the rebound. That's okay. But anybody else, let's just get married. Let's get it done.
30 seconds. Tell us about the podcast.
The podcast is awesome. We just did an episode on health and fitness, and you can hear that at @sobriety_pod. That's where our Twitter and Instagram is. You can also find us on Apple and Spotify and any other podcast links. It's some really tough work as far as emotionality goes, but we are blessed to be able to do it. And I really think we can help somebody with this podcast. It's great. Well, it's supporting sobriety. I'm a recovering alcoholic. My partner, Ryan Hedrick, our morning anchor, is a recovering addict, and we're trying to give support to the people beyond the people that helped us.
Soon to be married, Matt Bear. Matt, thank you.
God bless, guys.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hello, my name is Nigel. That's Jason Hammer right over there with a special guest on the hotline.
Tommy Pigott, Strategic Communications Director for the RNC, joins us. You can see some of his work at RNC Research. Tommy, in your opinion, how are both sides of the political scale, Republicans and Democrats, handling this anti-Semitic college campus situation?
Well, I think the contrast is clear. You had Speaker Johnson and other Republicans going up to Columbia, calling on the protests to end, and I hesitate to even use the word protest because we are hearing vile things out of these gatherings, these riots, really, that are shutting down these campuses. Meanwhile, Democrats are refusing to take a stand against this because they're afraid of their base. They're afraid of the far left. There's an anti-Semitism problem in the Democratic Party, and Joe Biden is showing that he's too weak to stand up against it. In fact, at a recent campaign event, AOC went up there at a Biden event and praised these riots at these college campuses. And then a few minutes later, Joe Biden goes up there and praises AOC. The contrast could not be clearer, and it shows that really the Democratic Party and Joe Biden is not meeting the moment.
Do you think some of it's organized? I mean, on a nationwide scale, in terms of these anti-Israel demonstrations on campuses?
Well, there is evidence of different groups that are organizing this. There is evidence of different money flowing from different groups to fund some of these quote-unquote protests. At the very least, they clearly are coordinated in the fact that they're happening at the same time. But there is evidence to back up the fact that there might be some more organizational coordination here. Regardless, even if there isn't, which their evidence suggests that there is, even if there isn't, it's on the president to call this out. All we've seen from him so far is a weak statement from a mid-level staffer at the White House. He has yet to come out and publicly condemn these riots that are happening here. The closest he's come to saying something like that was a very weak statement where he went out of his way to really condemn Israel in a lot of ways in the same breath, which is really unacceptable.
Right.
We need to be standing against the type of hateful rhetoric we're seeing from the left.
So for a guy who launched his presidential campaign video back in 2020 based on the Charlottesville hoax, if you will, and when I say hoax, I mean taking Donald Trump's comments completely out of context, eliminating the part where he totally condemns the lunatic white nationalists and those dorks with the tiki torches. That part got left out of his campaign launch video. He sure had no problem saying there were pretty good people on both sides of this protest situation on college campuses.
It shows that he's a hypocrite. It shows again that he's not meeting the moment. And it also shows that when he stands up there and talks about morality and decency and trying to lower the temperature, he's doing the exact opposite. It's really Joe Biden that is fueling a lot of the incivility that we're seeing around the country these days. It's coming straight from him. I mean, the example that you gave of them taking President Trump out of context, there's also other examples recently where they took President Trump's comments about a bloodbath for the auto industry. If Biden's reelected, they took that out of context. And you also have the campaign, the Biden campaign, every single day or practically so, taking Trump's comments when Trump goes out there and he talks about criminal, illegal immigrants that are crossing the border and committing crimes. When President Trump goes out there and says those criminals should not be in this country, you have the Biden campaign go out there, clip about 3 seconds, take it completely out of context and put it out there and say that President Trump was talking about immigrants when he clearly was talking about criminals. And for me, when I look at that, that's insulting to so many legal immigrants that came into this country, that every single day the Biden campaign is purposely conflating legal immigrants and criminals committing heinous crimes. That's offensive. That's honestly prejudicial. There's not really a word to use to describe it that is too out of bounds here, because that is so out of bounds for them to be doing that. And it happens almost every single day. The Biden campaign are hypocrites. They're fueling a lot of the hateful rhetoric we're seeing, and they're refusing to take a stand against the far left and all these anti-Semitic protests we're seeing on college campuses.
And so that being said, it begs the question, what is Joe Biden running on? What is his main platform? What are they speaking to their constituents about?
Well, really, it's just lie, hide, and smear. I mean, that's what his entire strategy is. That's what he's saying. I mean, you have Joe Biden, who is avoiding questions at every single instance that he can. He can't even go into a Wawa without it being staged. There are videos of his staff staging every single interaction that Biden has with anybody moments before Biden shows up, and yet he still manages to embarrass himself. He's hiding from questions. He's lying about his agenda. He's going out there claiming that the border is secure and that the economy, that his economic quote-unquote plan is working, when Americans see that it's not and the border is not secure. And then he's smearing his political opponents. He's going out there telling flat-out lies, taking things out of context, smearing parents, smearing pro-life Americans, smearing Americans that want common sense measures like voter ID. That is his strategy right now, and the mainstream media is more than happy to support him in that. But I don't think it's working, and that's why we're seeing polls across the country really showing Americans not trusting Biden and trusting President Trump more when it comes to key issues. And the final thing I'll say is this issue of debates has really come up again today, where Biden finally said that he'd be happy to debate President Trump. I think Biden should prove it. President Trump has said he is happy to debate Biden anytime, anywhere, any place.
Sure.
Biden can prove that he'd be happy to debate Trump if he agrees to a debate. But something tells me that Biden's handlers and his campaign are going to find a way to walk this one back.
Tommy Pickett is our guest. He is the Strategic Communications Director for the RNC. You can catch a lot of his work on the popular Twitter handle at RNC Research. Tommy, there have been some changes over at the RNC. New leadership's had a couple of months now. How are voter registrations and fundraising and the mail-in voter ballot harvesting initiatives going?
Look, it's going great. We're pedal to the metal. We have the momentum right now. We're seeing just since that, just in the last month, really, $100 million come in to the RNC and the Trump campaign, a massive number. We're seeing every single day that President Trump is in court, we're seeing, as Chairman Whatley announced today, $1 million in small dollar donations coming online. A lot of people that are standing up saying we've had enough of Joe Biden, we want to support President Trump. We're seeing that fundraising come in. And that's translating to work on the ground. We're seeing people that are making their plan to vote, making their plan to vote early. We're seeing voter registration gains in states like Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Georgia, a lot of momentum right now for Republicans and a lot of worry for Democrats. We're also seeing that in the polls beyond just the registration numbers as well. The polls showing that key demographics that Democrats have taken for granted, such as Hispanic Americans are moving towards President Trump in a big way. So we're seeing that in the voter registration. We're seeing that in the fundraising. We have the momentum. We're building on that with the infrastructure. And we're also building on that with our election integrity operation, where we have we announced the launch of the largest ever election integrity program, an unprecedented program when it comes to making sure that it's easier to vote and harder to cheat, and that we have common sense measures that Americans want to see.
And just one more thing, Tommy, you mentioned something called small dollar donations. What is it? Small dollar donation, and what can we glean from a small dollar donation to the RNC in the Trump campaign?
Yeah, a small dollar donation is a donation that really is just that. It's a donation that's not from a billionaire or a millionaire that is a couple $100,000 or millions of dollars or whatever it happens to be. It's really a lot of times $5, $10, $15, $20. Where people are stepping up and donating what they can afford, because they want to be part of this team that takes back and saves this country. And that shows the enthusiasm, because when you talk about small dollar donations, you're talking about each one of those individual people donating that. So that makes that money worth even more in a lot of ways, in the sense that it's indicative of the enthusiasm of thousands of people that are stepping up and making those donations and really joining this team to save this country. So that small dollar donation number is a really important indicator of the enthusiasm that we have behind President Trump and really the team that we're building across the country to win in November.
Tommy Pigott at RNC Research. Tommy, great stuff. We'll talk next week.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Have a good weekend.
You got it.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
According to a new survey, 45% of people say they can't remember the last time they went a full 24 hours without feeling irritated by something.
Okay. What are these irritations?
The top 10 answers in the survey: when someone doesn't clean up after their dog poops, potholes, being put on hold if you're making a phone call, people who don't use turn signals, some other things on the list.
So basically first world problems.
Right. You can't remember a password.
Oh, no, that I all the time.
Somebody takes up two parking spots when they try to park. When someone could hold the door for you, but doesn't. That's strong.
Didn't you hold the door for somebody and they yell at you for it?
I don't need a man to hold the door for me. All right. F you. Rob Kendall, next.
Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it.
My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer right over there, and I'll let you introduce a surprise in studio guest.
Normally, this gentleman joins us on Thursday
off
the rails, but he's back. An encore performance from Rob Kendall from the Kendall and Casey Show.
Hi, Rob.
Hello.
I asked Rob to come in today because I thought your opening segment today was incredibly helpful to a lot of people in regards to this whole Joe Hogsett MLS thing. There's a lot of layers here. There's a lot of inside political baseball, and you did a great job of basically explaining this because nobody knows inside Indiana politics more than you do. You did a great job of explaining this for the layman. So please reset what you think is going on here.
Well, this is fascinating because Joe Hogsett and the city of Indianapolis gave their wholehearted, full-throated endorsement of this mega development that the Indy 11 were going to produce, and the owners of the Indy 11 are going to produce right catty-corner from Lucas Oil Stadium. And this had been in the works for many, many years.
I see the site over there.
The demolition's begun. They were in the process of doing this, and it's this big soccer stadium and the development around it. You're taking this dilapidated area. And the kind of the porridge was just right that everybody came up with, and it's rare people kind of all feel good about these public stadium type of deals, is they said, hey, look, the Indy 11 are going to pay for this stadium. They're going to pay for the development around it. But what we're going to do is create, and it took an act of the Indiana General Assembly, a special taxing district where all the revenue, and I'm simplifying a very complex thing, but this is the high-level version, where all the revenue that's generated from these businesses, the property taxes, et cetera, is going to stay in that area. So it's not going to be an ask of the taxpayers. The developers is going to get their money back over time.
So the Indy 11 says, all right, we will build our own stadium. We're not going to ask for taxpayer money, but if we do that and you build restaurants and apartment buildings around and we help out this side of town, we want some perks of that.
Yeah, it took years to come up with this because initially they'd asked for a publicly funded stadium. That obviously didn't fly. They'd asked for bonding. That stuff didn't necessarily fly. And finally, with the support, and that's the key on this, right? With the support of the Indiana General Assembly and with the support of, most importantly, Joe Hogsett and the city of Indianapolis, this thing sailed through. How do we go from all of this years of effort, and you would assume everybody's on the same page, and here's what we're doing, and here's what we're building, and here's how we're going forward, to within seemingly in a very short amount of time, now you guys are on your own and we're going for an MLS team.
Yeah, so what happened yesterday with Joe Hogsett and this announcement, this separate announcement for a Major League Soccer franchise?
Well, that's what's fascinating, is apparently on Monday, Hogsett went to New York, goes and meets with the big muckety-mucks over there at MLS, and basically tells them, hey, I've got this super secretive ownership group that can pay the $500 million to get into the league and can build all this huge stadium complex and development around it, and then comes back, and within a couple days, now has this impromptu 2 press conference, which, let's face it, the Keystone Group that owns the 11, Ursel Özdemir, his group, they obviously got wind this was happening. They went to the IBJ and said, hey, we're done here. We can't trust the city of Indianapolis. We're done here. So then Hogsett goes, well, screw me, no, screw you, and has his press conference and goes, I'm trying to bring MLS.
Right. The timing of all that was very suspect, right? Because that IBJ story drops that there's bad blood between Hogsett's administration and the Indy 11 and the Keystone Group behind the Indy 11. Bad blood, looks like the stadium might fall through. And then literally hours later, like toward the end of our show, Hogsett has this half-assed, really short press conference where he doesn't take any questions and walks off the stage.
Here's what happened, and I think he's starting to put the pieces together and look, this is probably definitely going to go to court and everything will come out over time. But I think what they finally determined is Ursel Özdemir is a very rich guy. He's got very deep pockets. He didn't have enough deep pockets to fund an MLS team and an MLS franchise.
The Indy 11 owner is a rich guy, but he's not a super rich guy.
Right. And so Hogsett had two choices here. He either could say, much like with the Indianapolis Indians, we have this great community partner who has been a strong corporate citizen, and they're universally loved and respected, and they're doing this big thing, and this big thing is going to revitalize a dilapidated part of downtown, and we can support them and push them forward, which is what a decent human being would do. But instead, because this is the way Joe Hogsett always operates, is in the shadows and stabbing people in the back, he went kind of behind their back, it appears, and said, no, that's not good enough to be an entrenched part of the community for a decade. It's not good enough to be a great corporate citizen. It's not enough to have this great development plan. I need bigger. I need MLS, and you can't give it to me, so I'll find somebody who can.
So the Keystone Group, do they have their crap together in terms of putting all this?
Well, nobody knows now. This is the point. Nobody knows who the ownership group is with this MLS team, and nobody knows now what happens to Indy 11, because how does that relationship get repaired? I mean, clearly, they know Joe Hogsett has been plotting against them, basically, for quite a long time. So let's say the MLS thing doesn't work out. There's no guarantee it's going to. You got Tampa trying to get a team. You got Sacramento trying to get a team. They're not just going to roll over and go, oh, Indy's in now. We're out. What if you don't get the team? And Joe Hogsett has now said here's how I know he got a lot of pushback, because he had that press conference where he was basically no questions out the door in a matter of a few minutes yesterday. He's doing the rounds today, which tells me he has gotten a lot of pushback from the community on how the Indy 11 are being treated.
Now, listen, my expectations of Joe Hogsett are pretty low, right? I think everybody knows that. But even as dumb as that guy is, I don't think he goes to meet with the MLS and pull all this crap if he doesn't have the backers.
I would tend to agree with you with that. Here's the one thing, though, that I would say about all of this. And look, it's really easy to feel sympathetic for the Indy 11. It appears they're getting screwed here. However, the business community in this city, of which Ursel Özdemir is a very prominent member of, has repeatedly stood behind Joe Hogsett. Through all the crap Joe Hogsett has pulled over the years he has been mayor, they have refused to speak out against him. They have refused to organize against him. They have refused to back people running against him.
The Chamber of Commerce endorsed him in the last election.
I'm not going to feel sympathetic for you if you invite a vampire into your house and then go, well, the vampire drained all my blood. That's what Joe Hogsett is. He's a backstabbing vampire. He sucks the blood out of everything he comes in contact with, and I feel terrible on one hand that the Indy 11 are getting treated this way, but you've had an opportunity to stop this guy, and nobody ever stands up to him.
So what's the timeline here now? I mean, it sounds like it's in its infancy, correct? I mean, this is...
Yeah, nobody knows, because the Keystone Group has said, we're done with the stadium. We're not going to build a stadium.
So that site over there, where it looks like construction was basically underway, it's just going to sit there?
That's what it appears. I mean, I'm sure they'll try to sell it to somebody. Here's what I would not rule out. And given, I mean, let's face it, Hogsett is a total dirtball and will do whatever he has to do to get ahead. I would not rule out the city trying to, in some way, and I don't know how they'll do it or pull it off, try to get control of that property. Now, I don't know whether they'll go through the front door.
Well, they got control of a hotel earlier.
Well, this is the other thing people are beginning to say. Hey, isn't that magical that the city went for this taxpayer-funded hotel, which made absolutely no sense, and now you're going for this MLS team, and what sort of promises are potentially being made or deals are being struck? Nobody has any idea.
How do you feel if you're one of these other hotel owners? And we've talked about this before. Like Joe Hogsett and the City County Council, they've all been saying, look, we may be running this hotel, but we're not going to talk to Visit Indy or any of these tourism groups and push our hotel.
Yeah.
Wink, wink.
And there's a strong chance that it's all tied in together. Here's the thing, though. Joe Hogsett is proving to you that you cannot trust doing business with the city of Indianapolis. It's the equivalent of getting into bed with a loose woman and then acting surprised if she cheats on you as well. Like, it's who
That's
he is.
That's never happened with me before. My 20s were a blur, Rob. I'm sorry.
It's who he is. And look, the legal wrangling, if indeed that's the avenue it goes, is going to be fascinating to see what comes out about this, because the city says there is no deal. Ursel Özdemir is not that stupid to move forward with demolition and everything else without a deal.
Yeah.
So we'll see who's telling the truth in all this.
Last thing here, and we'll let you go. I stated earlier that for me, it feels like this is Joe Hogsett trying to get something on his legacy. Because right now, he's a three-term mayor, which is very rare in Indianapolis, but he's got nothing to show for it. If anything, he's going to go down as the guy with the highest homicide rates in history and the guy that wasn't around when the riots happened. You allowed these people to basically siege downtown. That's his legacy. I think he wants to have something on the books.
I agree. The issue with this, though, is what are we as a community? Like, the Indianapolis Indians are a great corporate partner. When Major League Baseball expands again, are we going to throw them and Victory Field under the bus? I mean, what value is it in being a good citizen and standing up for the community and in being a longstanding merchant and member of the business community?
Is this community going to be willing to put a taxpayer-funded soccer stadium out there?
Well, Abdul tweeted out that he said if indeed there's taxpayer funding component to this, which it appeared Hogsett alluded to that yesterday, there's not the votes on the city county council. It's very similar to what the Bears have going on now with their debacle and their stadium in Chicago. This is going to be fascinating to watch this unfold.
The Kendall and Casey Show, Monday through Friday, 9 to noon, right here at 93 WIBC. Rob, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
You two beautiful humans have a great one as well.
Hammer and Nigel presents is...
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yeah. Is... this anything?
All right, let's rock and roll.
Hammer, how do we play? Is this anything?
I am going to run some stories by you. You will be the one that breaks down all that information and gives us a verdict. Is the story anything or not? Is this anything? An LSU baseball fan getting smoked by a 109-mile-per-hour home run ball to the head is a social media superstar. His name is Corey, and he's got this big welt on his forehead, but he's just fine. He's okay. And the soundbite, the interview that he gave, is an all-timer.
You know, I've been carrying this glove with me for years. Now's my time. I got one coming. Hole in the glove, man. What can I say? Being off my dome and got a nice little goose egg.
Does it hurt?
It don't feel good. It felt like every bit of a 109-mile-an-hour home run ball, yes.
Did we get the ball afterwards? Or?
No, it skipped over the fence. But Josh Pearson, man, he's such a great guy. He came to toss me their toss ball that they do in between innings. Probably Friday I'll go get Tommy White to sign it for me and maybe kiss my Bobo.
Yes, please. I just reposted this footage at Hammer and Nigel. This guy is a true big old burly man from the bayou, and he took a shot to the dome from a 109-mile-an-hour homer, and he loved it.
Loved it.
You know, there's generation, you know, first of all, like Gen Z people would never be at an LSU baseball game to begin with. Didn't look like there was a lot of people there, but he's a genuine fan. He's a big old boy, and he's looking. What did he say? I might need to hear that entire thing again.
Yeah, we're going to need to hear this guy one more time, Allison.
Kiss on the Bobo.
You know, I've been carrying this glove with me for years.
He had a glove
now
with
him. My time. I got one coming. Hole in the glove, man. What can I say? Being off my dome and got a nice little goose egg.
Does it hurt?
It don't feel good. It felt like every bit of a 109-mile-an-hour home run ball, yes.
Did we get the ball afterwards? Or?
No, it skipped over the fence. But Josh Pearson, man, he's such a great guy. He came to toss me their toss ball that they do in between innings. Probably Friday I'll go get Tommy White to sign it for me and maybe kiss my Bobo.
Oh, that makes me feel good, man.
It didn't feel good.
But just the funny thing is, he's been going to these games for years. He's been bringing his baseball glove for years because he's sitting in an area where home runs are common, and he just totally blew it. He goes, hole in my glove, hole in my glove. So, yes, this is something. Please check out the footage at Hammer and Nigel.
You've seen that commercial, the SEC, it just matters more. Yes, that guy right there it. Is proof positive right there. Is this anything? A couple in Utah has been reunited with their cat, who they accidentally shipped to Amazon.com. The cat was hiding in a box that they'd returned. Here's Carrie and her husband explaining what happened.
We got the most amazing, insane news in the entire world. I just couldn't even believe that she was in California. I thought it was a prank. Like, I still hard to wrap my brain around. She was trapped in an Amazon package.
I mean, it was in this really big sized Amazon package.
We had no idea. So Matt took the package to the drop off without knowing that our dear cat was inside.
I'm wondering, and I don't know the backstory here, but when did they realize that they shipped their cat back to as a return to Amazon?
Right.
Or did they ever figure it out? Or did they just get a call?
Or did they do it on purpose? And now they're acting like, well, actually, we didn't know.
Actually, if you could turn it way up, Allison, we have exclusive audio of the moment the people at Amazon discovered the cat.
This box is meowing.
Let me see it.
She wrapped up her cat.
Take it in the kitchen and open it up.
Then we'll have a cat running around the house.
You can't leave it in the box.
Why would somebody wrap up a cat in a box?
There you go.
Okay.
The exact moment Amazon found the cat in the box.
The other box tasted like lime,
Hey-o!
I've been told. All right, it's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
With the 15th pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Indianapolis Colts select Liatu Latu, defensive end, UCLA.
The Hammer and Nigel Show. My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer right over there with a special guest on the hotline.
Kevin Bowen covers the Colts for 107.5 The Fan. He's also part of the morning show, The Wake-Up Call with KB and Andy. We got a lot going on, man. About an hour away from the Pacers tipping off down at the Fieldhouse. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But what do you think about the big draft pick, the pass rusher, the edge rusher from UCLA last night?
Yeah, I am a fan of addressing an area where I think this team has just lacked in recent years, and that's consistent pass rush, the inability to close out games. You know, we got probably a little bit numb to it back in the Peyton days of get a lead and watch Freedy and Mathis do their thing. And then, you know, lately when leads have happened for the Colts, especially at home, they've had such an inability to finish it off, particularly on defense. Now there is a major medical question with Liatu Latu. For those unfamiliar with the story, he actually medically retired from football in 2020 due to a neck injury. And ironically enough, the same surgeon that performed Peyton Manning's neck fusion did that for Latu. And after about 2 years away from football, he ended up being cleared by UCLA. So it wasn't Washington. They didn't clear him. Then UCLA ended up clearing him. And he played the last 2 years of college football, didn't miss a single game, and the Colts feel, and it sounds like the majority of the NFL felt good about him medically. Some teams did not, but the majority of the NFL did, and so the Colts are one of those teams. So that would be a huge storyline to follow throughout his career.
So what you're telling me, just so we're all on the same page, is that Jim Irsay's owned Indianapolis Colts said no to Peyton Manning when he had a neck injury, but yes to the UCLA kid when he had a neck injury.
When you put it like that.
Yeah, that is certainly not the question I was expecting, but yes. So yeah, I guess we'll, you know, put the statue next to Peyton for Liatu Latu one day, right?
So what is he? So obviously no red flags at all for this guy. I mean, he retired from football for 2 years, and then all of a sudden, I mean, I'm assuming the Colts and other teams did their homework. I mean, it is a legitimate concern.
Oh, without question. And look, I mean, guys, I think I speak for you too. I mean, when we're talking like medical issues, I mean, I couldn't sound dumber. So, you know, the combine process and the medical recheck here in Indianapolis, and you know, you would think and hope, and I would believe that the Colts did ample background check on him. And obviously, again, UCLA, you know, felt good enough about it. You know, he tried to blame a little bit of kind of the COVID season of Washington on them not clearing him, which I don't know how much that had to do with it as well. But the guy is pretty nuts. I mean, he, you know, wanted to go play professional rugby like 2 months after his next surgery. So this is a guy that's wired a little differently. But yes, there, I think there, you know, maybe more longevity concerns. You know, if you look at it, Clayton Gethers might not be a household Colts name to a lot, but he was a draft pick back in, it was 2015. His career lasted 5 years due to a neck issue. For what it's worth, Chris Ballard said last night, they don't feel this one is as severe as Clayton Gethers. So, you know, again, maybe you have a career that instead of 10 years, it's only 7 years. But, you know, anytime you talk about a neck and you talk about football, yeah, I mean, you'd be naive not to have some concern over it.
So injury stuff aside, million-dollar question, can he play? He was the first defensive player taken in the entire draft last night, KB. Is he that good?
I mean, you could make the case he was the best player in college football last season, regardless of position. Now, you know, Brock Bowers, tight end from Georgia, you know, Caleb Williams at USC, Jaden Daniels at LSU, and there are plenty of other, Marvin Harrison Jr. And there are a lot of other players that could stake some claim. But I mean, his pass rushing sack production numbers are right up there with anything we've seen in college football over the last few years. He led the entire nation in tackles for loss. He won the Lombardi Award given to the best lineman in all of college football. You know, over 20 sacks total the past two seasons in 25 games. So, you know, all of those numbers certainly catch your eye. You know, for the most part, it seems like he's a really polished player. You know, oftentimes you can get these pass rushers from college and they just maybe have out-athleted, you know, their opponent, especially guys maybe at smaller levels. Yeah, I'm just faster. I'm just bigger. You know, Latu, it's not like that really stands out. It's more of he's like, oh, yeah, I've got three pass rush moves, and I'm more of a technician. And I'm very polished. And if you watch even just a brief highlight reel of him, you'll see him doing a variety of moves and having, you know, lining up all over. So I think that aspect makes the Colts believe that he can offer some early impact, which is needed, because if you're going to have questions about his career longevity-wise, you need early impact from him.
A couple more things here on the Colts before we position or pivot to the Pacers here. The rest of the draft gets going tonight. We've got coverage here on WIBC beginning at 7, rounds 2 and 3. What are the needs for the Colts? What are we looking at?
Got to come out with a pass catcher, unquestionably. I had two goals entering the draft. One was kind of a Pro Bowl defender at a position that really, really matters, and that's what I think Latu could be. The other one would be getting that pass catcher and, you know, making sure Anthony Richardson has guys in that area to grow with. I also think a defensive back could make some sense as well. So if I probably had to pinpoint two areas, and again, two rounds tonight, they'll draft in the middle of round two, middle of round three, barring a trade, I would go there. I'd go a pass catcher, a wideout, and then probably a defensive back.
Have they given up on Alec Pierce?
I would say no. I think they believe they haven't had a quarterback that could accentuate Pierce's strengths. Pierce is a deep ball guy, and they feel like Anthony Richardson is that. And, you know, whether it was Gardner Minshew or certainly Matt Ryan, he is not that. So if we would have seen whiteout last night, you know, maybe that would have been more of an indicator they've given up on him. But I would say no. And, you know, he's only year two on a four-year rookie deal, so it's not like financially he's having a, you know, heavy burden or anything. But having said that, I think you do need to do something significant at wideout, even if you do believe in them.
Kevin Bowen, 107.5, The Fan. The Pacers about to tip off here around 5:30, home game. How are we feeling, man? How's it looking for you?
Boy, what a great atmosphere downtown. You know, I was downtown earlier today, and just, you know, from a weather standpoint, just seeing people in their, you know, blue and gold out, it was just awesome to see. It's crazy to think 6 years ago tonight is the last time this team has played a home playoff game. I have high expectations for them. You know, right now Milwaukee's banged up. You know, obviously we know no Giannis for tonight again, but Chris Middleton, one of their better players, is also iffy. And I just think naturally when teams return home, I would think the Pacers, you know, their other guys like Aaron Nesmith and Obi Toppin, maybe some guys that had some, you know, down moments in Milwaukee, I would think the home crowd would kind of lift them and they just shoot better at home. So I think the Pacers win tonight. Again, Giannis sounds like he's iffy for even Sunday. I think it'd be a disappointment if, you know, we're chatting next week and this team is not up 3-1 going back to Milwaukee. It's such a golden opportunity they have here from an injury standpoint. You can't squander it.
And the thing is, like, I'm a Pacer fan. I go to a lot of games. I know you watch and go to a lot of games. Pacers, though, they're one of those teams where they're better as an underdog. They don't handle being a favorite very well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, if you want to go back to this season, while they have responded well, and we saw that game one to game two, they have not strung a lot of success together. You know, you didn't see these super long winning streaks. You know, they had elements that they kind of played to their competition, which in the playoffs, you obviously like that. So I think that is something just to, you know, okay, how do you handle this sort of success? This is different. You know, it's one thing to respond from an embarrassing performance. Now everybody told you how good you are for a few days. How do you handle that? But again, Milwaukee's just so banged up and so much turmoil with them right now. I really think the Pacers are going to get it done.
And man, you said it. Downtown is buzzing. I hope that place is Thunderdome tonight. I hope everybody that's going to that game takes out all of their frustrations on Dame Lillard and Bobby Portis and everybody in between, man. I hope it's just an unbelievable atmosphere there.
Put on the gold shirts. Don't be afraid of them. I'm sick and tired of seeing the rich people in the front rows afraid to put on the gold shirts. Embrace it. Put them on. It's not going to harm you or all of a sudden lessen your income that you're wearing a $19.99 shirt. Put it on and, like Hammer said, be loud and give them hell.
Where can we get more coverage of everything going on?
Yeah, I'll be out of the draft complex all this week for the Colts. So 107.5thefan.com. Just head there, and you got plenty of written coverage on the site.
KB, you're the best. Thank you.
Boys, have a great weekend.
Caller at number 9 was Dave. Dave's not here. How are you, Dave?
Dave. How is everybody? I'm good, thank you.
I'm sure you hear that from time to time, right? Dave's not
Every
here.
Once in a while.
Little
Dave's
Cheech and Chong throwback. Dave, here's the deal. We're going to play a little game called Andretti, Petty, or Famous for Spaghetti. You get 2 out of 3 correct. We're going to give you tickets to go see the Grand Prix, okay?
Right on.
Here we go. Andretti, Petty, or Famous for Spaghetti was the special guest for the very first ever Tales from the Track hosted by WIBC.
Andretti.
Yes, that's correct. All right, get this one right. We're throwing a party. Andretti, Petty, or Famous for Spaghetti? Fat Brands, the owners of Fazoli's.
That would be spaghetti.
Hey!
Yeah!
Dave, were you thinking about whether or not it might have been Tom Petty there?
I was trying to remember if I had to say something other than spaghetti.
What company owns Fazoli's?
F-A-T, Fat Brands. Fat Brands Incorporated, to be precise.
Okay.
They recently bought Fazoli's, so they are in charge. Dave, my man, congratulations. You're going to go to the Sanseo IndyCar Grand Prix on the road course at IMS, May 11th. Tickets are on sale right now, but you got your tickets. Stay on the line, and Allison will take care of you, okay?
Thank you so much.
You got it.
It's an interesting name for a corporation that owns a bunch of...
I love
they
it.
They own Fat Burger, Fazoli's, Johnny Rockets, Fat
I love
Brands.
It. Do you want to have your restaurant owned by somebody called Go on a Diet? Or do you want to have your restaurant chain owned by Fat Brands? I'll tell you right now where
All
I
right.
want to go. It's Fat Brands. Coming up after 5 here, 5:06, Brian Mowry of the City County Council. We got to talk about this MLS thing. That's next.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show. I'm Jason Hammer. Big Nige is here. And man... there's a lot going on with this Joe Hogsett MLS story. We've been talking about it all afternoon, and I want to get somebody in the mix here. Brian Mowry is the minority leader for the City County Council here in Indy. So, Brian, when did you find out that old Boss Hogsett was going to waddle up there to the microphone and announce that we're chasing down an MLS team?
So the first time I heard news about this was actually not from the administration at all. It was from the developer, Keystone, that brought me in to let me know that the deal is on the rocks right now, and that the city is now potentially pursuing outside people from outside the state that can come in and bring in MLS teams, what they're telling the city. And I, to my recollection, that's been the goal all along with Indy 11, is to one day transform that into an MLS team. I don't know why we wouldn't go with someone homegrown and rather than go out of town to find somebody to do this. I think Keystone can get this done. I have faith they can get it done. And for the city to start pulling the rug from under them is disgusting.
So for those who don't know how business works at the City County Council, normally the mayor, or at least his administration, runs things by you, or at the very least, the Democrat majority. I understand sometimes the Republicans may be the last to know, but at least the Democrat majority of the council. It sounds like the Republicans and the Democrats were caught off guard.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a conversation with Madam Leader Lewis on the Democrat side, and she was caught off guard as well. So I jokingly told her I expect this kind of treatment to the Republicans, but certainly not your own Democrats doing that to you. But it goes to show how much this has been in secrecy. And from what I'm gathering from the rumblings on the council between the other councilors, is there's not a lot of support for the administration to do this project without Keystone.
So the way that I understand this, the Keystone Group, which was kind of behind the Indy 11 and building this new stadium over near the west side of Indianapolis, they all of a sudden have said, you know what, we feel like we're being a little disrespected here, and this whole stadium deal, which the construction looks like it's already began, the area's blocked off, might not even happen now, but Joe Hogsett is pitching an MLS team to come to Indy without a stadium, without a plan, and without talking to the city county council?
It's a bold move. It's something that I don't know how we try to get this done without having input from counselors. Given that at the end of the day, this would have to pass the council to be able to be for it to be done, and to keep us all in the dark and not in the loop on this, just goes to show that what they're doing is not something that I think the city wants to see. Especially the counselors. We don't want to be left out. The citizens don't want to be left out. The taxpayers deserve to know things that are going on. And if that's what the route we're trying to take, we need to know why that is. And they should have brought us in a long time ago, not just at the 11th hour. Oh, hey, by the way, we have this new project. Let's not forget that the development of what's going on for Indy 11 Park right now they've already sunk tens of millions of dollars into this between remediation, demolition, and design.
And it sounds to me, Brian, like you guys as a council were left out, and even the Indy 11 were kind of left out. Because you got to remember, one of Joe Hogsett's longtime political advisors and aides, Thomas Carl Cook, is working over with the Indy 11. And based on reporting from our friend Abdul, it sounds like he also was kind of left out of the conversations.
Yeah, from what I gathered from the conversations I've had with East Keystone and Indy 11 and Thomas Cook, is the city kind of went on a left them on red, if you will. They left them on red, and they weren't responding to anything. And then all of a sudden, now the deal's dead, and they're going with somebody else. And that's all fine and dandy if that's how you think it's going to work, but in reality, that's not how it's going to work. It still has to go by the council, and the mayor still has to get council support for this.
Now, normally, correct me if I'm wrong, whatever Joe wants, unfortunately, the numbers dictate that the council usually goes along with it. It's a very Democrat-heavy city-county council. But I'm kind of hearing that even like Vop Osley and some of these Dems, they're a little ticked off because of the way this thing went down.
That's been the consensus, absolutely, between amongst all counselors, is they're very ticked off and upset about how this has been handled. And I don't think the mayor has the support at the moment to get this done without Indy 11.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, but this can't happen without the support of the council, right?
Absolutely, yeah, you're absolutely correct. And let's not forget, we've already passed, the state passed the PSDA already, and we've passed our part of it as well. So we've already set the ball in motion. Now we're trying to roll that back.
So what happens with the Indy 11 now? Have there been any conversations about the future of them? I assume if an MLS franchise comes to Indy, that's the end of the Indy 11, which is kind of a rough way to end a great partner for the community. But let's just say the MLS decides to pick Tampa or Sacramento or one of these other cities bidding for the franchise. What now? How do you restore that relationship with the Indy 11?
That's the short-sightedness of this administration. We see acting on impulse and not thinking of the long-term ramifications of what could happen if this doesn't go through like they want it to. You've now spit in the face of a loyal hometown person that has developed a lot of Indy and has been a key stakeholder in the city for many years. Now you're sitting in his face and telling him that, oh, you can be a small piece of this, or you can not be a piece of it at all. We don't really care. That's not how this should be working.
We're chatting with Brian Mowry. He's the minority leader on the City County Council about this bizarre Joe Hawks at press conference yesterday about possibly bringing an MLS franchise to Indy. And I'm noticing that the hotel that the city is now running for some reason is being built. Illinois Street's being blocked off for a number of weeks now for more construction on that. Is that part of the selling process of what's going on here? Because I can't imagine the other hotel owners in the city, you know, the owners of the JW Marriott or any one of these other hotels, are real happy about this city-ran hotel. And now we're finding out Joe's trying to do back alley deals to bring major franchises here. It just seems like that would be part of the conversation. And that sounds kind of dirty.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. I think this has been handled very poorly and very dirty. And the fact that everything has been so secretive and behind closed doors seemingly is disheartening. And it doesn't give you a lot of confidence in administration to do the right thing and bring in the key stakeholders from the beginning rather than at the 11th hour.
How much of this, and again, this is my opinion, and I said this earlier in the show, how much of this do you think is Joe Hogsett wanting to have something positive for his legacy? Because right now, he's a three-term mayor, which is very rare in the history of this city, but he's got nothing to show for it other than the highest homicide rates the city has ever seen, the riots, and going missing during the riots. I know for a fact Joe tried to get other gigs before he ran for a third term. He couldn't find anything. So how much of this do you think is an ego thing for Joe Hogsett wanting to have something to say that this is my legacy? I brought a franchise here, because right now I don't think he's got anything to show for it.
Yeah, let's not, you know, at the end of the day, he's going to have 12 years to actually have said he's done something. And at the end of the day, right now, he's got nothing. Like you said, the only thing he's got is record homicides. And that's certainly not the trend we want to see the city going into. And this could be a potential way for him to try to make something of a legacy of what he did for the city. Rather, I don't think that he's gone about this in the right way to do that. And as such, he didn't get the support of counselors and left us in the dark for so long that now a lot of counselors are ticked off and saying, no, we're going to stick with the original proposal as proposed. And not pursue this other deal now with someone. It feels to me like someone from out of town saw that Ursal was doing something big with Indy 11 and then said, well, maybe I should try to get in on a piece of that. And the city just went right for it.
And what kind of message does this send to other business owners in Indy? I mean, look how dirty the Indy 11 are being treated here. I mean, if you're a business owner and you decide to partner with Joe Hogsett, first of all, that's on you. But second of all, what kind of message does that send?
Yeah, I mean, we've had groundbreakings with the mayor, the governor. Like I said earlier, the Indy 11 Keystone have sunk tens of millions of dollars into this. What does that tell? Absolutely. Well, you know, that's a great question. What does that tell the other business owners and business partners of the city? To me, that tells them that they are not as valued as they think they are. And, oh, you did all this work to remediate the site. We appreciate that. Thanks for setting it up for us. We'll go ahead and take it from here, and leaving you, the person that did all the work, out of it, which is wrong. And that's not how we should be handling this.
Brian, last thing here before we let you go. What's next? Like, what do you guys do next as a council? What's the timeline of dealing with this big mess?
Yeah, next is hopefully I get drawn in by the administration for more than just one call, to hear their side of it. I've had one call with someone from the administration, to hear somewhat of their side, but never had a meeting with them about this until yesterday. That's disappointing in and of itself, but now we go to the full council. It'll try to be introduced to the full council and then heard at committee. Let's hope that the councilors stay where they are now, in opposing this and staying with the homegrown people.
Brian Mowry, he is the minority leader for the Indy City County Council. Brian, thank you so much for your time, and please keep us up to date on what's going on here, because I think a lot of people are curious about how this is going to play out.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on, and thank your listeners for listening.
Are you really okay with me?
Are you okay?
Everything's gonna be okay.
Are you okay?
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
I'm pretty far from okay.
Are you okay with this? On the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Oh, yeah! A Minnesota couple started dating after the woman ordered food and asked her Grubhub driver to go out on a date. Now they're getting married next year. Here's Hannah telling the story of how she first met her fiance, Alec.
I happened to have like a ping on my phone from Grubhub that I had a coupon. I was like, I love good coupon.
Yes.
I saw that it was like fast approaching. I was like, perfect. They're going to drop it off in the lobby. I look grubby. And then this number calls me. I was like, oh no, it's the Grubhub guy. He wants me to go down there and get my food. So I went down, I'm walking down the stairs and I see him. And I was like, oh no, he's cute. He's so cute. And I was not cute. I had this number on me. So I was like, maybe I should text this number. Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? If he already has a girlfriend or he's like not interested, I'm never gonna see him again.
Chick shoots her shot, thinks the Grubhub driver is cute, and winds up marrying him. Are you okay with this?
Yes, I'm 100% okay with this. It was Wayne Gretzky that said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. She took her shot. And I don't understand why people are so, like, shocked by this. I've seen so many porn movies where a delivery driver comes over and delivers more than the food.
This is normal behavior, is what you're saying?
It happens all the time in adult cinema, Nige. So I don't know why people are surprised that there's a romance here between the delivery guy and an attractive woman.
I will say, if the tables were turned, it might be a little more creepy. That kind of thing doesn't normally happen. Like, it's the dude that's the customer and tries to get with or slide into the DMs of his attractive Grubhub female driver. That probably, I don't see that happening a lot. Not even in the movies you watch.
Or maybe, and I'm just spitballing here hypothetically, let's say you're a prominent sports writer for a newspaper and you do something really creepy to a prominent female athlete. Yeah, that would not be appropriate, but nothing like that's ever happened, God.
In Missouri, a tornado struck right in the middle of a rehearsal dinner. Here's Brookdale Farms general manager James talking about what happened.
My wedding coordinators really jumped into action when they saw the glass garage doors starting to bow in, and they got everyone to safety in time before a portion of the roof was ripped off, and immediately went to Taylor and Kyle and just embraced her. On the outside, she was keeping it together a lot better than I think a lot of brides would, but I knew on the inside she was panicked. She'd been working on planning this special day for about 2 years.
And for what it's worth, even with the tornado aftermath, the wedding still went on as planned. Are you okay with this?
Yes, I'm okay with this.
Really?
I've got a similar story. In 2002, the reception hall where we were going to have our wedding reception was damaged by a tornado.
Oh, wow.
The atrium on the south side had tornado damage, and like the roof was ripped off. So a month before the wedding, we didn't have a reception place. Luckily, another venue stepped up and said, we'll take care of you guys. So I understand what it's like, man. You work so hard to prepare for a wedding. There are so many things to plan. You got to make sure you've got the church or wherever you're getting married, the reception place, the food, the drinks, you know, the tabletop things. All of that crap goes into planning a wedding, hiring the DJ or the band, and then imagine 1 month right before, or in this case, you know,
the day of,
some sort of crazy thing happens. It can freak you out. It can be incredibly stressful. So I know what they're going through.
Are you okay with this? Motley Crue, they got a new song out. It's called Dogs of War. And it features their new lead guitarist, John Five. The band describes
that's
the
his
song,
name, John Five.
John Five, yes.
Seven. Let's name the kid Seven. George Costanza.
Here's what the new song sounds like. Dogs of War. Bastards.
Bastards.
All right. Fast forward to the lyrics, maybe.
What a bastard talk.
Are you okay with the new Motley Crue song?
Man, I don't know. I love the Crew. Like, we use Motley Crue at the top of every hour. Kickstart My Heart is like the official theme song of the Hammer and Nigel show. When I hear Kickstart My Heart come on anywhere else, awesome. I immediately get ready to do the Hammer and Nigel show. But I don't know about this one. First of all, I don't like getting called a bastard multiple times in a row. And then John Five. Five's not a last name. Five's a number. So I'm going to have to probably take a hard pass on this one.
All right.
Nothing personal. I love the Crew, but I think I'm out on this one.
All right.
Coming up next, special guest.
Joel Pollack, Breitbart senior political editor, and he's going to break down the latest on all the crazy anti-Semitic, anti-Israel protests on college campuses across this country.
That's coming up next, right after the news.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
The Hammer and Nigel Show. My name is Nigel. Hammer is here. We've been seeing anti-Semitic, anti-Israel protests break out all across the country on college campuses. Here, even in Indiana, down at Bloomington at IU, we had a few protesters arrested outside the governor's mansion yesterday as well. Covering it all is Breitbart News senior editor-at-large Joel Pollack. Joel, I know you've been to Israel several times since October 7th. You've seen carnage. You've seen worldwide protests, anti-Israel protests. Have you seen anything in terms of the scale and scope quite like this here in the United States?
No, we haven't. And it's obviously coordinated by several well-funded groups. And we know that there's some George Soros money going into some of these groups, at least one of them. A group that calls itself Jewish Voice for Peace, but is actually a voice for terrorism and has been for a long time. They have supported terror and terrorists. So that's who is organizing this or deeply involved in it. And it hasn't escaped notice that many of the tents are the same. The talking points are the same. The tactics are the same. Our education institutions and our Jewish students are under assault in an organized way. And what I find striking about it is how quiet the Biden administration is about it. We saw that President Joe Biden equivocated. He condemned the anti-Semitism of the protests, but then condemned people who don't listen to the protesters as if they're somehow raising a legitimate grievance that is making these Jewish students so afraid. And we don't hear anything from Merrick Garland or Kristen Clark. Kristen Clark is the head of the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. You might recall she was confirmed over Republican objections because she had some anti-Semitism questions about her past. When she was at Harvard in the 1990s, she invited an anti-Semitic speaker onto campus and gave him a platform. And that came up in the confirmation hearings. Merrick Garland vouched for her, what a wonderful person she is, et cetera. And she regretted all the things she had done in her past. Well, she's now quiet on this anti-Semitism on campus. And the silence is really deafening. I mean, this is an organized group. It's not just about the education institutions. It's not just about the Ivy League or some bad administrators. This is an organized effort across many states, possibly including some international organization, and it's well-funded. It's a civil rights violation. You know, they charged Trump with conspiracy to interfere with civil rights. That's the charge in one of Jack Smith's cases. This is a conspiracy to interfere with the civil rights of Jewish students. I don't see anybody getting charged or investigated. The Department of Justice is very quiet and unconscionably so.
Well, Joel, here in Indiana, I'm seeing the ACLU put out tweets basically saying to leave the protesters alone. That's the angle and that's the side that the ACLU has chosen. And it feels like it's deja vu from 2020, right? Where they're trying to tell us that a lot of these things are peaceful. There was an NBC reporter that was saying that everything that's happening at Columbia is actually peaceful. There's a lot of similarities happening between now and the Summer of Love.
Yeah, the ACLU ceased long ago to be a civil liberties organization and became a radical left organization. But that NBC reporter went out there and said, oh, yeah, you know, we didn't see any violence at Columbia. And, you know, it's so ridiculous because it's like saying that burning a cross on someone's lawn isn't actually violence because nobody was hurt. That's the equivalent. And that's what's happening at Columbia. Basically, they're saying that Israel should be destroyed. They are actually saying explicitly anti-Semitic things. Sometimes Jews who were leaving campus were taunted. Yes, it was outside the gates of Columbia, but it was definitely connected to what was going on, and they were taunted with anti-Semitic chants and things like that. So the fact that Columbia's Orthodox rabbi felt concerned enough to tell students to return home until Columbia had made the necessary security changes tells you that there's something very serious going on here. And NBC, of course, trying to cover up for the far left, says that there's nothing wrong. No violence. You know, this is an exception that is not made for any other minority group.
Right. You and know, if it were a bunch of MAGA hat wearing white guys with tiki torches, like in Charlottesville, I'm willing to bet the media coverage or the ACLU may have a different perspective.
Yeah, at Yale, they tore down an American flag, the anti-Israel protesters. You always know who the pro-Israel protesters are because they're the ones waving the American flag. The anti-Israel ones are the ones burning the American flag or tearing it down. So they tore it down at Yale. And I saw a funny but sadly true comment, which is that if conservatives had torn down a rainbow flag or a progress pride flag, you know, one of the LGBTQ flags, there would have been investigations and suspensions and arrests, but you can just tear down the American flag and it's just another day at Yale.
Breitbart News senior editor-at-large Joel Pollack here on the Hammer and Nigel Show. Please tell me you're seeing some pushback here. Are there pro-Israel demonstrations going on? Is there anybody in the public? I did see Robert Kraft, owner of the Patriots, pull his funding from his alma mater there at Columbia.
Well, people are voting with their feet. I mean, Harvard, which has been at the epicenter of this as well, saw a decline in its applications. And people are deciding not to apply to some of these schools. They're going to lose Jewish students. They're going to lose serious students who just don't want to have their education disrupted by this kind of nonsense. There have been some pro-Israel counter demonstrations. Yesterday at Northwestern University, which is near where I grew up, there were some pro-Israel protesters who stood there with an Israeli flag. And they had an American flag, too, that was stolen by the anti-Israel protesters and not returned. But, you know, in general, people who support Israel have other things to do with their lives. They have jobs. They have exams to study for. They have things to live for. They have families to take care of. Israel and the United States are societies that are successful, where people work hard and they get ahead and they innovate. And the Palestinian national movement has not been successful because it is obsessed with its own grievances and doesn't build anything or do anything positive. And unfortunately, we have an element of that in our own society and the political left, where people just live for these confrontations with authority but don't actually do anything. So you've got these misguided, sometimes evil, but often just lost kids in these encampments thinking that they're doing something. And they're sitting outside miserable at Harvard. I mean, this is my favorite story of the week. At Harvard, they were drenched by the automatic yard sprinklers that went on overnight. Yeah. But, you know, these are kids who are not successful. They're not happy. Protesting doesn't make you happy in this way. You know, we have this romanticization of the civil rights movement and the 60s anti-war protests. And that's because I think there was an element of the counterculture that went along with some of these protests that did make them fun. Woodstock was fun. The Summer of Love was somewhat fun in San Francisco in 1967, that kind of thing. Berkeley was fun in 1964, the free speech movement. But long ago, when these causes lost their motivation, they also lost their fun. And these people who are camping out, they're not happy. Many of them have
miserable
billions
people.
Of different pronouns. They can't figure out what gender they are. They can't figure out, you know, anything about their lives. And they're sitting there on the grass while the other students, the pro-Israel students or just the indifferent students, are going to class and finishing their semester and getting ready for summer jobs. So this is a sign of the disintegration of a whole generation that is basically being brought up on radical confrontations with authority, but not actually building anything in themselves.
Finally, before we let you go, Joel Pollack from Breitbart here on the Hammer and Nigel show. We've had a week or two to assess what exactly happened between Israel and Iran, the unprecedented attack, Iran directly sending suicide drones and missiles into Israel, and then the Israel response. What's going on there now? It seems like it's quieted down a little bit. How did you assess that whole situation?
Well, I think Israel wanted to respond in a more aggressive way. They wanted to go after the Iranian nuclear program and possibly targets representing the Iranian regime. The U.S. put pressure on Israel not to do that. And there were voices in Israel who thought, you know what, we won this round. Let's finish the job in Gaza with Hamas. Let's focus on the threat of Hezbollah. So they responded in a way that let the Iranians know that they could target the nuclear program, but they weren't doing so this time. So they knocked out some of the air defenses and things like that. And I think Iran is basically defenseless when it comes to air defenses. They rely on these Russian systems that the Israelis know how to evade. And it was a warning from Israel to Iran saying, listen, we know how to get to you. You can't really get to us. You fired 300 things at us. We knocked them all down. And we can get to you and you won't even know it. So I think it was an effective rush back by the Israelis. And now they have to focus on getting rid of Hamas and hopefully getting the hostages back.
How close is Israel to doing that?
It's hard to say. You know, as we're speaking now, there are all kinds of different contradictory reports coming out about whether Israel is going to go into Rafah, the last Hamas stronghold in Gaza, whether Israel isn't going to do it, whether there's going to be a hostage deal or not. So I don't really know, and we probably won't know anything until next week where things become a little bit clearer. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is going there. They're probably going to hold off on doing anything until he's there on Tuesday. So we'll see what happens, but I do think that Israel is going to go in, if I had to guess, because Israelis are determined to win the war. And I think that determination is going to override everything else.
He's Joel Pollack, senior editor at large for Breitbart.com. Find all his work at Breitbart.com. Thank you so much, Joel. Have a great weekend.
And now,
Hammer and Nigel present
beer sample.
Fry.
I got some beers. Let's drink them, huh?
Beer's on sale, people. Come down, get you some.
We're brought to you by Thompson Furniture and Mattress in Columbus. Free delivery within 75 miles. I believe you and your family just took advantage of that free delivery aspect.
Absolutely.
The Thompson Furniture and Mattress in Columbus.
Big Mike and his son brought a nightstand and like a little table for our bedroom up. And I love it. It's awesome. These guys support what we do here on the Hammer and Nigel show. Please, if you need something for the homestead, check out Thompson Furniture in Columbus.
And so what do we do on this segment in particular?
We drink beer.
It's a very basic concept.
And sometimes we pick beers that we've never had.
Yep.
Other times, bars or breweries bring us beer.
Sure.
Today, I went to the store.
Did you?
And man, I was fired up about this Pacers game tonight. I'm fired up for the NFL draft, which we've got tonight. Night, you know, after our program at 7. So I wanted something local, something indie related. So I got us this.
Oh, Daredevil Indy Premium Lager. One of my favorite local breweries.
It says Indy right there on the can.
Everything Indy. All things Indy. Cheers.
To the weekend, everybody. The weekend is underway.
Mm-hmm.
That tastes like happy.
Yeah.
If you ask me what happy tastes like, it's that. Daredevil Indy. I-N-D-Y.
Now, something you may not have known, Hammer, is today, this is a very special day. It's a very important day, this Friday, April 26th. It is National Hairball Awareness Day.
Oh, really?
You had a cat at one time, I believe.
Have one now.
You do have one now.
Yes.
Do you have problems with the hairballs?
Yeah. Once the cat starts to shed a little bit, you find those hairballs around the house.
You ever given your cat a bath?
Yes.
You do give them baths? Well, I've had my cat for years.
I think we need to make death row prisoners do that because it's daunting.
Here is the promotional audio for Hairball Awareness Day, exclusively from the Hammer and Nigel show.
Today's show is brought to you by National Hairball Awareness Day. Cats, interrupting your good night's sleep by hacking up a collection of dead hair and digestive juices since the dawn of time. Ask your insomnia if hairballs are right for you.
Did I really need to hear the vomiting of the hairball?
Today's show is brought to you by National Hairball Awareness Day.
That! Come on! I thought you meant like hair just kind of shedding off the cat.
No, no, no.
And then I hear that.
No, no, please. And long neck eyes go in from my heart.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.